Weekly Pulse of the Green and Gold with the three-time Wisconsin sports writer of the year, Jason Wilde. I am Alex Strofe with him. We call this Weekly Wilde, or I really like the idea of calling this Dirty Laundry with Jason Wilde and Alex Strofe, because you're having washer issues. I'm just me. I think we might be onto something with Dirty Laundry.
We're definitely airing our dirty laundry, yeah, and maybe, yeah, the Packers as well. Yeah, I could do it from the laundromat until my wash machine gets here on Saturday. But yeah, it's been a tough week. I'm very obsessive about laundry, okay, and so watching it pile up, and obviously Paula and really the girls. I mean, with all the stuff that the girls are involved in, like they're really like changing clothes like three times. Like Sydney had a volleyball match and a soccer practice and the clothes she wore to school. So it's piling up quickly. I like to keep it very much managed, kind of like my radio appearances, you know, they're staggered, and it's been a tough few days, but hey, great Brewers game on Wednesday night. And now we're talking about a Packers team that should go to Los Angeles and win.
They should go to Los Angeles and win. But before we get there, let's start with last week, because I think I feel better a few days removed about Jordan Love's performance against Minnesota than maybe I did in the moment, right? Four touchdowns, three interceptions. He had 54 pass attempts in his return game after missing two games due to the sprained MCL. I thought he was fine. I don't want to say he was bad. I don't want to say he was good. I thought he was fine. Obviously, a few crucial mistakes. It took him a little bit to get going in the early goings, and at that point, the scoreboard already read, you know, 21-0 or 28-0. What did you make, now a few days removed, Jason, of Jordan Love's return game against the Minnesota Vikings last Sunday?
Yeah, and, you know, he was asked at his locker on Wednesday about, you know, was this – how do you view the 200 passing yards you had in the fourth quarter? And look, you can't get behind by four touchdowns. You can't win if you're going to throw the ball 54 times. I mean, he also had a scramble and he was sacked once. So that's 56 dropbacks out of, I think, 75, 76 snaps. You can't live that way. Now, that said, I thought for a guy whose accuracy and ball placement was very shaky to start the game, by his own admission, by the way, I don't need to say that, he said it. I thought, and Matt LaFleur, actually, I was literally about to ask this question of him on Monday when he said it on his own. But my question was going to be, hey, Matt, you've said a million times you don't want to throw the ball 54 times, but when you've got a quarterback who's trying to shake the rust off, is that like a blessing in disguise? And before I could even ask, he went there and said exactly that, that, you know, he thought his accuracy improved through the course of the ball game, and that it was really good for him to make that many throws in a game scenario. Now, that said, the final interception that he throws, a little bit like the one in San Francisco, in a way, not the same pressure. This was an all-out blitz, and he's got Harrison Smith in his face, but that's not an accuracy issue. That's a bad decision issue, and he knows he's got to be better than that. And so, you know, I would agree with you. I think it was better than meh. I mean, that's a whale of a throw on the first touchdown, and it's a fantastic catch by Reed as well. But, you know, he made throws, there's no doubt about it, but he also made mistakes, and more importantly, he looked rusty and inaccurate, and I would anticipate that changing on Sunday in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I imagine he'll settle in. And you know, I think that's kind of what that Minnesota game was. I'm going to ask you this question, but I know it's probably A, too early to tell, and B, maybe not the best example. But playing from behind, you know, throughout the entirety of that game, Jason, essentially, that's why you throw the ball 54 times. But is this an offense that's built better to maintain a lead rather than play from behind? Because it seems like Matt LaFleur really gets in his bag when this team is either, the game is tied, it's early on in the going, or if they're up by three or a touchdown. You couldn't really establish the run when you're down 21, 28 points. And this team worries me when they play from behind. Obviously, they only lost by two and they missed two field goals, so you can do the math on that. But I know every team would prepare or prefer to play from ahead, but it seems like a team that might struggle more than others playing from behind, at least in offense.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, we don't know. Maybe the Vikings are a team that can't play from behind.
It's true.
Because they haven't been behind. Like, I think they've been behind 3.5 minutes all season.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're right. Obviously, you much rather play. I just think the Packers are a team that need, and this is no revelation either, you can't get down 28 to nothing.
Yeah, no. That's a revelation.
Right, but let's be honest. By like 10 and a half minutes left in the game, it's a one-score game.
Right.
So you don't necessarily have to keep slinging it all over the ball yard either. And so maybe that is where Matt LaFleur needed to take a step back and say, okay, we're back in this game now. I can stop being, Johnny Ketchup. And we can now take the approach of, okay, we're back in a manageable situation. We can be more balanced offensively. I don't think he did that. And maybe it's hard as a play caller. I don't call plays. But maybe it's hard as a play caller to get into that mode and then get caught up and then say, okay, I don't have to be in this mode anymore. Maybe you just stay in that mode once you're in it. But, yeah, they were in a position where they could certainly have been more balanced late in the game, and they obviously didn't do that. I don't know. I'm really curious because Josh Jacobs is clearly a workhorse capable back. Mm-hmm. And I think the carries were split 9-8. The snaps were like 60-40, but Jacobs got yanked for some early missed protection calls, and they went to a guy who they were unsure about his protection abilities in training camp. So I'm not really sure what to make of that. I just think their offense is better, whether it's Aaron Jones before or Josh Jacobs now. I think their offense is better when they're getting their stud running back the football on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah, I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to figure that one out, but I'm with you on that. And obviously Emmanuel Wilson, who Jason's referring to, on the other snap share. Let's go to the defense because they fascinate me through about a quarter of the season. You know, they had a really nice performance the week prior in Tennessee. 8 sacks, getting the Will Levis, creating turnovers. Minnesota just didn't see that same defense, right? The pass rush was essentially non-existent. Xavier McKinney had another interception. That's 4 in 4 games. The last Packer to do that was Nick Collins. So that's a good sign, at least in terms of your offseason ad. But overall, this looked like a different defense from week 3 to week 4 when it came to creating pressure. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, they created pressure against Tennessee, and they didn't create it against the Vikings.
That's a fair point.
Look, Will Levis, that offensive line, the momentum that was created in that game, like, it just, when it rained, it poured on Will Levis and the Titans. Like, that just got out of hand. Like, yeah. I joked about this, but they looked like they were holding their defensive line meetings in the backfield with Will Levis laying on the ground underneath them. I mean, that's how often and how many of them were in the backfield in that game. And that obviously wasn't the case. Look, they got 2 sacks in this game against the Vikings, and both were by people that don't play on the defensive line. One was by Quay Walker for a 13-yard loss. One was by Keyshawn Nixon untouched on a blitz that led to a fumble. You want that in your arsenal. There's no doubt about that, but you don't want to have to live like that. And I know Jeff Hafley doesn't want to live like that. Now, is Jeff Hafley willing to live like that if that's what it takes? Absolutely. But all these teams that have had success, and I'm not just talking about this system, I'm talking over the last 3 decades, are the ones that get after the quarterback with 4 guys because it opens up so many options from your coverage standpoint to make things way more difficult on the quarterback. I mean, look at the 49ers, right, with Bosa and those guys when they have gone to the last couple of Super Bowls they've been to. Look at the Giants when they beat Tom Brady twice in Super Bowls.
Yeah,
you know, they had the OCU Manura, Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck crew. Like, if you can get pressure with 4, your playbook defensively just is wide open for all kinds of games you can play. Now, we talked to Jason Rebrovich, the defensive line coach, on Wednesday. kind of peppered him with a myriad of questions about the pass rush. And, you know, I think he even acknowledged maybe they need to play a few more games, you know, tight end, tackle, defensive end stunts or whatever it might be, twists and that kind of stuff to maybe free up. Maybe they're not doing that enough. Maybe they're just kind of rushing traditionally. But, you know, they need their – look, the investments that they made in their front four demand more productivity. And I don't have to tell Rashawn Gary that. I don't have to tell Lucas Van Ness that. I don't have to tell Kenny Clark that. I don't have to tell Devontae Wyatt that. You know what all four of those guys have in common? They're all first-round draft picks. And the other guy, Preston Smith, is their lone remaining high-paid veteran that they signed in free agency in 2019. So, you know, those five guys specifically, and then, you know, Kingsley Enagbare and Carl Brooks, et cetera, are day three picks. But you got to get more out of those guys. And Jeff Hafley wants to rush with four, so he has more options in coverage. If he has to come out of that, he's shown that he will, but and he may have to do it more if they don't get it going.
Yeah, you're right about that. I will say Kingsley Enagbare, I thought, has had a nice season in relief. But other than that, to your point, Rashawn Gary.
Him and Wyatt are the two best guys they've had.
Yeah.
And that should not be the case.
No, it shouldn't be, right? I was just about to make the or read you the statistic, Jason, and I know you know this one, but it's one I've had a lot of fun with this week, is Rashawn Gary, through four games, has one sack. Their nickel corner, Keyshawn Nixon, has two sacks through four games. That's probably not how it should be if I was a gambling man.
Yeah, and look, I think he's got one sack in his last 11 games he's played.
That is correct. Yeah.
You know, his pass rush win rate, according to Pro Football Focus, is 3%.
Oof.
I don't trust everything that Pro Football Focus does. But that, when the number's that low, that's not great. I mean, I think we all saw the clip across social media of him getting stuffed by a tight end one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked Rebrovich about that play specifically, and he's like, yeah, that, you know, that's a screen pass. I don't know if Rashawn was thrown by how they protected. But look, again, my point to Rebrovich was those are the kind of plays where he has to win. Like, we could talk, and I don't know what the double team percentage has been on him or how many times he's been chipped, how many times he's been thumped by a tight end. But the bottom line is, A, when you're an elite pass rusher, which is the phrase that some of us like to use about him, you have to win those anyway. Micah Parsons, I think Micah Parsons gets double teamed and chipped all the time, and he still gets home when he's healthy. He's injured, obviously, now. But he's got to win those on occasion. And whenever he manages to have a one-on-one, then he better get home.
Yeah.
And so, again, I don't know when that's going to occur, but he knows he's got to be better. And Rebrovich went through how his expectations are higher than anyone's. Well, then I would hope that Rashawn would say that I'm not meeting my high expectations for myself.
Before we turn our attention to the Rams, time for a brand new segment here on Weekly Wildy. The meaning of a cap. Why South Dakota State? I noticed the hat you're wearing. South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits. I got to know.
So I have a stack here. Hold on one second.
Yes. Okay, here we go.
I don't want to knock all my pens and stuff off here, but I have a series of hats here. I have Best Dad. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Old minor league team in San Francisco. Old minor league team, the River Dogs. This is you being a Fox Valley guy.
Yeah,
this
Timber Rattlers, yeah.
From one of the games that the Timber Rattlers played. Great partner, Three Tree Marketing, Johnson & Sons Paving, Oregon, and, of course, Rots.
Rots Hots, yeah. Love to see it.
So the deal is this. We record this on Thursday mornings at 8 o'clock. And Thursday's kind of a busy morning for me. I'm on with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. And then I have another radio appearance that I've been doing for 20 years at another station. So I go from that to that to this. And I also want to get a workout in, so I've not showered. So this will be a hat-a-palooza every week that you turn in. Talk about dirty laundry. I'm wearing dirty laundry because I haven't showered.
Amazing. Amazing. So I got distracted, but admittedly, I imagine most of our audience, and maybe you aren't even aware of my background. My high school job, Jason, was in Lids in Green Bay. I worked at Lids, the hat store, for several years. So I have a fascination with hats.
Do you still get an employee discount or is that gone?
No, that's long gone. And it wasn't that good to begin with. So all is well. That ends well. Let's talk about this weekend's game. I view it as the Packers head to the LA Rams, according to ESPN Bet, as it stands as of Thursday morning. Packers 3.5-point favorites. I view this as a get-right game, right? The Rams are beat up. There's no more Aaron Donald, right? Matthew Stafford's still a good quarterback. But outside of that, I'm not very scared of the Rams. Now, they have a very good head coach, who Matt LaFleur obviously has ties with. They have a pretty good offensive coordinator, who Matt LaFleur certainly has ties with, because his last name is also LaFleur. That would be his brother, Mike. But Matt LaFleur also 4-0 in his career against Sean McVay. I view this weekend's game as kind of a get-right game, get to 3-2, and you're on to the Cardinals. How do you view this weekend in L.A.?
Yeah, look, there's a big-time opportunity here, right, over these next four games. I mean, obviously the Texans we think are pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Rams on the road, Arizona at home, Houston at home, Jacksonville on the road.
That is correct. Yep.
That sounds like a potential four-game winning streak to me. And suddenly now, instead of being 2-2, you're 6-2. And right. Now things – all right, now, you know, I take it one game at a time, of course, because that's how I'm wired. But, yeah, this is, a get-right game is a perfect phrase for this. You know, the way you lose this game is if you make a lot of self-inflicted mistakes and some guys that – the Rams are not anticipating being productive. I mean, look, they're still professionals, and obviously Matthew Stafford is still a good quarterback. He is also not a very mobile quarterback. So yet again, and their offensive line has had some struggles. This seems like a game where you should also be able to get your pass rush fixed a little bit. So if those things don't happen, then you start to see, you know, you're on the road. Also, is it going to be a road game? Like, I'm assuming, much like the L.A. Coliseum for the Badgers against USC, there's going to be a heck of a lot of Packers fans out in L.A. Eating up a lot of the tickets. So every reason I have to believe that this is a game that gets them pointed back in the right direction, gets them their first win with Jordan Love starting at quarterback this season, should occur at SoFi.
Yeah, I would never make the joke, but the fact that Malik Willis is 2-0, and of course he played mediocre to subpar competition, and Jordan Love is 0-2, just kind of a funny stat a quarter of the way through the season, right? I mean, I don't think this is how anybody drew it up, you know, at the end of August when cutdown day was.
Yeah, quarterback wins, not a stat.
That's true. It's very true. And obviously,
I don't know. I get alleged that I use it as a stat all the time by my cohort, but I'm not. They are 0-2 in games started by Malik Willis, and they are, or 2-0 in games started by Malik Willis, 0-2 in games started by Jordan Love.
Yeah, I would just say the Vikings and the Eagles a little bit better than the Titans and the Colts.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, but also I think the Rams fall closer, at least as it stands right now, to that Titans Colts category than they do.
No doubt.
Vikings and the Eagles. Quick state of the NFC North chat check before we get to four downs. Vikings are 4-0. Lions go into their bye week at 3-1 and a really nice performance on Monday Night Football. Packers and Bears both 2-2. I think, you know, heading into the season, we talked plenty about it on our various shows, Jason. We expected this to be a pretty good division. I just don't think we expected the Vikings to be in first place through a quarter of the way and still undefeated with a win over the Packers through 4 weeks. It's shaken out to be a really fun division this season in the NFC North.
Yeah, not only a win over the Packers, but a win over the Texans.
And the Niners.
And a win over the Niners. Now, I know the Niners were beat up and they don't have McCaffrey and everything else, but the bottom line is you play the teams that are on your schedule when they're scheduled to play you, and you beat the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a Viking-centric show. You can find plenty of those out of the Twin Cities. But I've been impressed with them, and I am a Kevin O'Connell fan. He's a good coach.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he's. I think he's kind of in that same vein as LaFleur, that he's just a guy that is really smart and has a really good design and has taken what he's learned from McVay and those other type of guys and now applied them to his head coaching job. And he's getting the most out of Sam Darnold. And just like Matt LaFleur did a hell of a job getting the most out of Malik Willis. So, you know, the fact of the matter is they're essentially three games back of the Vikings with two losses and the head-to-head tiebreaker. So they got some ground to make up, but they got more than enough time to do that. And, you know, the vagaries of a NFL season, I mean, we're seeing it right now. Like the Packers are going to have to go to – they're going to L.A. L.A.'s lost their best two wide receivers to injuries.
Yeah.
The Packers have lost, you know, Watson's not going to play this week. I doubt Alexander's going to play this week. Wyatt's not going to play this week. So injuries are part of it. And if you can navigate those and still win football games, you're going to be in a really good spot by the end of the year.
Yeah, we got about 15 minutes left, so let's get to four downs. Let's start with some of those names you just listed with the injury check-in here on first down. You mentioned Christian Watson. It seems like it's better than initially expected, given how ugly that injury was on Sunday against the Vikings. Devontae Wyatt likely not going to play as well. And you mentioned Jair Alexander. That one was wacky to me. We talked about it plenty on Green Bay game day. I didn't really realize the severity of the groin injury that popped up on the injury report last Friday. He ends up missing a matchup we all know he's been itching to get after for over a year now against Justin Jefferson last week. So those three names in particular, just feel free to talk on any of them in any way you'd like. Devontae Wyatt, Christian Watson, Jair Alexander.
Yeah, I mean, not only was Christian Watson dodging a more serious injury, like Matt LaFleur said, we got lucky there. That was a big win for me too. Media starts with me, and I got Matt LaFleur successfully on Wednesday to flat out say, as opposed to having to rely on Jordan Schultz's report or this or that, that he's not going to have to go on IR. And we know what that means now. This is one of the few things that have changed in terms of injuries that now we have some context clues to figure out a guy's situation and the severity of his injury. If he's not going on IR, that means the injury is not a four-week injury. It's less than that. And so that's great news. Now, I pushed my luck, and I said, is it the same with Devontae Wyatt? And then he went back to hedging. So I would say that there's a chance that Devontae Wyatt, then when you juxtapose that with his answer about Watson, could be on IR and miss the next four games. So that's those two. The Alexander thing, you know, again, I think Rob said it when he was on at 9:30 on Green Bay game day pregame. And then we obviously got the news that he was inactive. Clearly what happened, and Matt LaFleur confirmed this to me after the game, when I asked him about it in the press conference, was he suffered the injury in practice Thursday. He had been on the injury report with a quadriceps injury. Then they add the groin and he doesn't practice on Friday. I was like, ooh, there's something new here. And that's a really bad sign for his availability. And it turned out to be the case. So, you know, it sounds like he's not going to play this week either. How long he's going to be sidelined, I don't know. But back to our original point, do you want to go against Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua without him? No. Can you survive without him, without those guys on the other side? Yes, I think you can.
Well said. Let's go to second down. We'll stick with the negatives because I want to end on a high note here in our four downs portion of the program. Oh, Braden Arvidsson misses two field goals against the Minnesota Vikings. You said last week on this very program, he's good for about one miss a game. He doubled up after you said that last week against Minnesota. The Packers then host on Tuesday tryouts with Chad Ryland and Lucas Havrisik, two kickers. They don't sign either of them, at least as of recording. So it seems like Braden Arvidsson will at least be your kicker this week, if not further down the line. Kicking issues in Green Bay. Stop me if you've heard that before.
Yeah, so I thought it was really interesting. I got a ton of respect for the kid. Like, he stood in yesterday and answered every single question. Nice. And I love his – again, I can see why they really like him. Because part of the conversation – and look, this is part of the job, is to ask the hard questions and, yeah, you know, be empathetic while also asking what needs to be asked to get fans the information. But he flat out said it, like, most teams, I'd probably be gone or it. And that's kind of the crux of what he said to us. And he's really grateful that the Packers are sticking with him, but he's got to do his damn job. And he gets that. You know, what I thought was interesting, and I don't kick field goals for a living, but I do understand some of the parallels he made. And he talked about if you're a golfer, it is better to have a one-way miss than to have two-way misses. And, you know, one swing you're duck hooking it, the next swing you're slicing it. That makes it a hell of a lot harder to fix. Well, the good news about his five misses, including the one that was wiped out by penalty in Tennessee, is they were all right, all to the right. And what I thought was fascinating was, and I used this in my story in the State Journal on Thursday morning, was that he actually broke down what he's been doing wrong. He has been in the games, his plant foot, which is his left foot as he swings through, is wide of where it's supposed to hit in relation to the ball. And what I thought, and that's what's pushing the ball right. But what I thought was really interesting was Bisaccia saw it, Narveson saw it on film, but the first guy to notice it was Matt Orzech, their long snapper, who noticed it in real time, and he is looking through his legs upside down 7 yards back with a guy about to ram into him on the line of scrimmage. And so if your long snapper is noticing that subtle mistake that you're making on the kicks you miss, that would tell me that it's a pretty blatant thing, and at least it's easily repairable. And whether or not he does that this week, we'll have to wait and see. But if you're making the same mistake and it's causing the same result, that's good news to me, because now you know what you have to fix. Now go out there and fix it and start making kicks again.
That right there is why I wanted this show to happen. That's a damn good story. So how'd you get that one? You talked to Orzech?
So no, Braden Narveson told us at his locker. Like, the group kind of dispersed and there were a handful of guys still left. Wow. And that was part of the conversation at the end of the locker room on Wednesday. It was, yeah, that you know, he said, he used the comparison about a golf swing, and then, you know, kind of asked him what the exact thing is that he's doing wrong. He told us, which I love. Like, that again, I know this sounds Pollyanna-ish and hokey or whatever else, but like, I absolutely love what I do. Yeah. I've told people this. I wanted to do this from when I was a fourth grader, reading Sports Illustrated. My dad worked in a factory for 40 years. Didn't have a great relationship with him, but that's another podcast for another day. But the bottom line is I love what I get to do. And I take the responsibility of sharing this and being the conduit to the fans really seriously. Like, not like I cover the White House seriously, or I'm a war correspondent seriously, but this is the stuff fans should want to know. So that's fine if you're frustrated with Braden Narveson for his misses.
Yeah.
Totally fine. But now you've got the insight into what he's doing wrong and what he's trying to do to fix it. And I would like to think that that's useful information for our fans.
I would agree with the useful part of that. That was really good stuff from you on second down. Let's see if you can top it on third down.
Probably not.
I was at game two of Brewers Mets wild card series Wednesday night at AmFam Field. I think it is the second best atmosphere I've ever been in. Number one for me, attendance wise, is 2019 season. 2020 was technically the calendar year. It was that playoff game at Lambeau against the Seattle Seahawks. I thought that atmosphere was just unbelievable. As a journalist, I understand you're not a fan, but atmospheres, I know you can gauge. What are some of the best atmospheres you've been a part of?
Well, let's see. Game four of the 1982 ALCS when I was 10.
Okay.
Mark Brohard with some pretty big hits in a win over the Angels to force a game five. Let's see, in terms of actual, like, I will say this, like, when the Bucks went on that Eastern Conference Finals run with George Karl as the coach and Big Dog and Ray Allen.
Oh, was that 01?
That's the 2001, yep. And that was the loudest of any sporting event I've covered. Now, you got to remember, I'm twice your age. And so I've been in some really great venues, right? Like, during the Super Bowl run in 96, it was unbelievable because they were at home for all those games. Like, and that was just incredible. Of more recent vintage, though, you know, I think that 2003 playoff run, which is still 20 years ago, but like, after Favre's dad died and he played so well in Oakland, like the atmosphere on the last day of the regular season when everyone's hoping for the Vikings to lose in Arizona. And then we want the ball and we're going to score a playoff game against True. Seattle and the pick six by Al Harris. Like, those are all the kind of, you know, indelible moments that you never forget. I mean, look, I heard Levering's call on the home runs in the eighth inning, which were much better than the TV calls. And I did. That's what I did last night, was I synced up the radio with the TV because I wanted to listen to Levering. And that atmosphere, I'm sure it was extremely cool for you to be in, because I saw somebody did this on Twitter. I know we got to get to fourth down, but somebody took Garrett Mitchell's home run and
I saw you tweeted this,
the music from the Scott Hatteberg home run in Moneyball on it. And it was magnificent. So kudos to whoever did that.
Yeah, you could find that on Jason's Twitter at Jason J. Wilde. I saw that this morning before we recorded. It was that was super well done. All right, I don't know if I bought us enough time. We've got about 7 or so minutes left for fourth down. Jaden Reed is wide receiver 1, right?
No doubt. And I'm working on a story for Sunday State Journal and Madison.com about, not only is he wide receiver 1 in terms of his talent and what he's able to do, but he's also, like, dare I say, he is their heart and soul guy.
Oh.
Like, and I want to talk to a few more people about this, but I talked to Wicks. You know, him and Wicks are like brothers. Like, and that includes, like, getting after each other. And I was talking to Reed yesterday, who both those guys, I'm way older than both of them. And this isn't some sort of weird humble brag, but for some reason, I've at least gotten to a point with both of them where they kind of trust me, that I've had some really good conversations with both of them. And on the Wicks thing, it was really interesting because I asked Reed I said, nobody knows him better than you. He's like, hey, we were here on Monday, and the first thing he did was he was on the jugs machine. Like before we went to meetings, before anything else. Like, wow. So that tells you a little something about his brother in Wicks and what he wanted to do. And so then I talked to Wicks about Reed, about, you know, the energy thing. And like, he is, you know, they're too young to know who the Energizer Bunny is, but like that really? Touchdown at the end of the half and what he does to try and get the crowd into it, was that's the kind of stuff you need somebody who does that. And while Jordan Love can be occasionally demonstrative, that's not his personality, right? You know, I don't think Watson is that. Romeo Dobbs definitely isn't that. You know, maybe Tucker Kraft has some of that, but I don't think Luke Musgrave does. So they need somebody to be that kind of guy, that get the crowd and get your team excited and energetic, and there's no question that that is also what Reed does for them. So it is a potentially lethal combination for opponents. That, I mean, look, he has, if we're looking purely on measurables, he's not the fastest guy, not the biggest guy, doesn't have the biggest vertical leap, but like, I don't know how many guys I've seen of his size that you throw up a ball and it's his or nobody's. Like, the catches he made, forget about the touchdown, the other two catches he made, like, he fought for those balls. Those were not easy catches. And so, yeah, he's a stud. They are really lucky to have him. And while I maybe drew the, you know, I'm big on my comparisons after all these years, if I drew the comparison to Randall Cobb, I'm starting to think that the comparison is more to Greg Jennings.
Wow.
Because Greg Jennings did, you know, just had different, Cobb and 14 still lined up outside. He just, you know, he didn't stay healthy enough to sustain how good he was in 14. And that's one of my favorite guys. But maybe there's a little more Jennings to him, because Jennings was smooth. He was explosive. He was another guy that wasn't the fastest guy on the field, but he was running away from dudes on deep balls.
Really good stuff there. Yeah, the debate is over. Jaden Reed is wide receiver 1, but his brother, 13 targets last week, and obviously going to be in a big spot with Christian Watson likely out this Sunday.
Yeah, crazy stat, too. And I mentioned this I think it was from Pro Football Focus or the 33rd team. Jaden Reed or Dontavian Wicks was open on 88% of his routes.
Whoa.
Most in the league in week four. So, yes, he dropped three balls. But as he and I discussed, I'm going to write that today. He got open a hell of a lot. And that's a pretty good sign. If you fix the drop thing, then you're really putting up some big numbers. Because he put up pretty big numbers with three drops in the game.
Yeah, you're totally right on that. It's Packers-Rams Sunday, 3:25 Central kickoff. Green Bay Game Day on ESPN Wisconsin and 620 WTMJ begins at noon. Jason will join me, Brian Bulaga, John Anderson, Rob Domofsky throughout from noon to 3:25, leading you up to kickoff. I already plugged it, but I'll plug it again. Jason is back on Twitter, at Jason J. Wilde, something Rob Domofsky is not. You can get me on Twitter, at Alex_Strofe. And we do this every Thursday. We call it Weekly Wilde or Dirty Laundry or something in between. Jason, really good stuff today, pal. I think this was your best episode yet.
Not only that, but we still have like 30 seconds left in our free Zoom. So we really managed the clock well as well.
We're growing together just like the Packers defense under Jeff Hafley.
Green and growing.
Green and growing.
Green and growing.
We'll talk to you next week on Weekly Wilde. Green and